This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and talk about Space Geek one more time. We have another fantastic guest who is actually a friend of mine, and I know she is involved in some super cool space stuff, and we are going to learn a lot today.
Oh, well, I can't wait to find out what we're going to do. What is the question that she's going to solve?
How do you keep astronauts alive in space?
Oh, this sounds really important. How do you keep astronauts alive in space? I think this is a pretty big deal, Jeff.
It is definitely a big deal, and talk about problem solving. It takes wicked smart people like our guest today, who is a mechanical engineer and currently works as a systems engineer for Paragon Space Development Corporation. It's Bailey Burns.
Welcome to the show, Bailey.
Hi, everyone. I'm really excited to talk about space stuff today. This is going to be awesome.
This is so cool. So you have like two different things. You're a mechanical engineer, which our listeners kind of know a little bit about. But what is a systems engineer?
That's a really, really good question, because not a lot of people know about systems engineering. And I didn't until I started working in the field. I got my degree in mechanical engineering, so I'm really good with physical things, parts, gears, that kind of stuff of the mechanical side. But I actually shifted and started to use that in terms of systems. So instead of focusing on the individual things like the gears and everything, we focus on bringing all those things together so you have a functioning whatever, rocket ship, car, whatever you're trying to build, you have to have someone that pulls all those pieces together.
Oh.
If you're one of the engineering team that pulls it all together, that sounds like you need to know about a lot of different things to make sure they work right together.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite parts of my job, is because I have to keep learning no matter what. I always have to learn something new. Obviously, I started mechanical, so I have a really good physical kind of understanding. But then I started getting into understanding software and coding and stuff like that, not because I had to do it, but because I had to understand it. And then you start getting into the chemistry and the biology, and it's just so that you can pull it all together and make it work as one big thing.
And that's the cool thing about this show, right? Like, we talk to kids and we tell them how learning just one thing can lead to another, can lead to another, can lead to another. And pretty soon you have a whole breadth of knowledge that you have to apply, right?
That's exactly it. You have to keep putting tools in your toolbox. You can't just learn one thing and be done. You have to keep going. And luckily I have a job that forces me to do that every day. It's super fun.
Well, obviously the title of our podcast is Solve It for Kids. And we're talking a lot about how lots of scientists and engineers and experts, their job is basically problem solving. As a systems engineer, with the definition you just gave, I don't know if there's any better job definition of solving problems, because you're getting pieces, parts for spacecraft and spaceships from separate teams, and that stuff all has to work together. And that's your job, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like the next level up, right? You have to think of all their problems and then figure out how to solve them in the bigger scheme of everything. And it's super interesting, super fun. I focus on specifically contingency scenarios. So if there is an issue in space, what are the pieces we're going to do to keep those humans alive, keep everyone healthy and happy if something goes horribly, horribly wrong? So that's another one. You have to plan to solve things in the future too.
Exactly. So that fits in right in with your question that you are solving, is how do you keep astronauts alive in space? So can you give us some of these scenarios that you've tried to work on and so forth?
Yeah. So keeping humans alive is really, really hard in space because space is like actively trying to kill you. We only can really live on Earth. So you have to think of everything in space. We don't have air to breathe. We don't have water in space. The radiation from the sun is way worse. So there's tons of problems you have to solve. And we're just now kind of starting to figure out all those problems so that we can go forth and go take over the stars and everything. So basically what I focus on is kind of like the air, I guess, like the air we have down here on Earth. I have to focus on the oxygen contents and removing all the CO2. So you breathe in the oxygen and then you breathe out CO2.
Right.
So you have to get rid of all the CO2. We have to keep the pressure at a healthy level, the temperatures. Space is really, really, really cold, but it can also get really, really, really hot.
Yep.
So we have to keep everything within what humans are used to here on Earth. And then the tricky thing is we have to do it sustainably. We can't just keep launching all these things up. And, you know, rockets cost a lot of money. So we have to figure out how to do this in a way that we can do it repeatedly.
That's really cool. And I think you just said something about how space gets really, really cold and really, really hot. Most of us, our experience of space is TV and the movies. And I think we kind of gloss over the realities of things like that. Like, we're not at Star Trek yet, so everything's not just comfortable walking around, going down to the holodeck. These are real problems where your spaceship's either going to get really, really cold or really, really hot. And humans are only meant to live in a certain zone.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting part of it is like, there can be a fluctuation of like 400 degrees. Which is like absolutely insane on the outside. So then on the inside, we've got to keep it within what it like. Humans are pretty comfortable at about 70 degrees, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's a range of 400 and we like one of those degrees.
Yeah.
Well, now for our listeners who might not be familiar. So I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, that depends on where, say, for example, they're in the ISS. That depends on where they are in their rotation. If they're closer to the sun, then they're going to be hotter. Is that correct? And then
on the
far side, then that's when it's cold. Okay.
Just we have solar flares and all these things that can kind of change everything. Like you said, when there's these places on the moon, they're called permanently shadowed regions. They never see sunlight. And so they are actually so cold, because they never see that sunlight to warm up again. So if you never see the sun, you just are constantly cold.
So if you go visit the moon, those are not the places you want to
land. Don't go there. Well, actually, it's funny because you want to go visit there and take some stuff back because in these permanently shadowed regions, there's actually water and the water is frozen. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
The water's frozen there because it got so cold that the water could not evaporate and go off into space. So we actually have ice on the moon, which is really good for my company because we want to be able to have water in space.
Right. Which is a big problem. I mean, what are you going to do? Take all these big water bottle gallons up there with you? Water's heavy too,
and
right?
Expensive, yeah.
And expensive.
Heavy, expensive. And doesn't water give us access to a lot of the resources that we need when we use it in different ways? It's not just for drinking. Can't we also use it for hydroponics and watering plants? And I'm not a chemistry major, but maybe you two can help me out. Can't we separate water and make rocket fuel?
That is exactly how it works. Water is like gold in space because of how valuable it is.
That's a great way to put that.
You have to like water your plants and, you know, all that sort of stuff. You can get the oxygen for humans to breathe from it.
Really?
You can use the hydrogen, like hydrogen cells and stuff like that. And then rocket fuel. That's one of my favorite topics. Rocket fuel is a big tank of hydrogen and a big tank of oxygen, which if you look at water, it's H2O. Those are literally the two ingredients of water.
Right.
So we can start using it for rocket fuel too.
And there is just ice in these, what did you call them? Permanently shadowed regions?
Mm-hmm.
There's just ice. So if we land close enough that we can go get that and then use that as a resource.
There's a lot more technology that they're trying to figure out on how to do that. But at a high level, that is exactly it. Yep.
So let's talk water on. So say, for example, you're on the International Space Station and you're up there for a while. Plus, also water's used in showers and stuff, too. Right. Where do they get the water that they have up on the International Space Station?
So a lot of it, they have to launch, like what we just kind of said, that you're launching gallons of water into space. And right now, I think the sticker price is it's $10,000 per kilogram of water. So That's a lot of money. Yeah. And you have to keep humans alive with that water. So it's a tricky situation. So yeah, we have to keep launching water up and everything like that. But then we have this really cool thing that I'm sure a lot of people have kind of heard about, but don't fully understand. We actually are starting to look at how we can recycle water, where we have, you know, humans drink water, and then we have to do something with that water. So we end up peeing it out, right?
Yep.
Well, the theory is you can capture that, remove all the toxins and the bad stuff in the pee, and be left with water, basically.
And then you drink it again.
Okay.
And then it just goes through the cycle again. Okay. Yeah.
So here we go.
Like, well, I mean, when you're in a small
space. And that will just continue going.
Right. But I mean, when you're in a small space, what are you going to do, right? I mean, you have water. Why not use it?
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about breathing in oxygen, hydrogen. We're talking about the water. Lots of space fans are still thinking about the Apollo era astronauts that went to the moon. And we hear stories about what's going on in the ISS. Yes, they grow some plants now. And yes, they're recycling some water. Are we making bigger strides to get ready for going back to the moon and then eventually longer term missions out to Mars?
I think, yeah, people are really trying to figure out what those answers are going to be. And the cool thing about this, when you talk about solving it, right? That's what we're doing here, is we're talking about how to solve it. There's no right answer. You know, there's tons of people that have different ideas and doing it in different ways that, you know, that could be a viable solution for that company. And that could, there's no one way to do this space thing. It's just, you have to be creative about what you're doing. And like, one of my favorite things to talk about, it's not something that my company focuses on, but that I'm fascinated by, is doing everything that I just talked about with algae, which is absolutely fascinating to me, because algae will take in the CO2. So you don't have to worry about the CO2. Mm-hmm. It can clean urine. It can clean the air. And so a lot of people are really interested in how can we keep people alive using algae, which is a whole different discussion.
I haven't read anything about that. You just gave me some homework. I got to go do that now.
It's super cool. And then so you have like my company, which we're doing this all through like understanding biochemistry and that kind of stuff. And then we've got the pure biology side, which is algae. And so really what we're going to be doing when we go to the moon and Mars and so on is we're going to be figuring out how all these different things work together and how we can do it for the least amount of energy, the least amount of resources. Those are our constraints. We've got to keep it feasible.
So
you have got a giant problem-solving puzzle right there.
So is your company one of the ones who's forward-thinking about when we go to the moon and like how we would live there? Because, I mean, that's eventually, right? Like, we want to go, first we want to get to the moon, but then eventually the goal is to live there, right? To have some kind of settlement. And that's a little wild to think about. How would you get water and all of these other food up there?
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. I would say, so my company, I think we're going to be a really key player in that. I don't think we'll be the ones like designing the base and everything like that, but we're going to be involved with every single step of the way of keeping those humans alive. Kind of like how, you know, you have like your HVAC people down here on Earth or your electricians here on Earth that kind of go into every building. We're going to be like that, where we make sure that the air is good in every building, every step of the way.
That's very cool. That's very cool and super important. Like that sounds like the understatement of the podcast at this point. And that's also no matter where you go, your company is in spacecraft. We need the same thing. Whether we go to the moon, we need the same thing. As soon as we get to Mars, we need the same thing. And as soon as we're ready to go beyond Mars, humans can't live without those systems. So that's got to be a lot of fun to work with day by day.
And yeah, like you said, it's every step of the way. We're thinking about it on the ISS right now, right? That's in low Earth orbit, but that's where we're actually applying it. But like you said, we are actively looking at how this is going to happen for Moon and Mars. And yeah, in the future, what that would mean. One of my favorite examples of that is something that went up on the Perseverance rover earlier this year. This thing called MOXIE. Once again, my company was not involved with it, but it's very applicable. MOXIE takes the CO2 in the air on Mars and can turn it back into oxygen. So it's another form of using what we have there to keep humans alive.
Hey.
So this is the first prototype of that?
Yeah, yeah. And we can't do that on the moon. That's special to Mars because Mars has that CO2. So we kind of have to play with the environment we're given.
Oh, interesting. So now in the beginning, you talked a little bit about contingencies. So are there contingencies that you're aware of? So if something goes wrong on the ISS or something were to go wrong when astronauts are on Mars, is this something everyone's brainstorming now?
One of my favorite parts about being a systems engineer is we just go and sit in a room for hours and think of all the things that could happen. That's when we have those meetings. Those are like my favorite meetings. It's just like story time of what's the worst case that could happen. They're so much fun because you get to just let your imagination run wild for a little bit. And then we have to go solve those problems that we just came up with. But it's really, really fun and really interesting because then you have to start, you have to put yourself in the mind of an astronaut and be like, okay, well, what if, you know, it starts getting too hot? Well, you know, what happens when it gets too hot is you can start sweating and then you have so much more water that you have to deal with in the air. And like, it's all connected. Right. And you have to figure out what this means for everything. So it's kind of fun to dive into those rabbit holes of what could happen.
I want to be a fly on the wall of one of your brainstorming sessions. That's that, just to hear what you guys are coming up with. That sounds like it would be a lot of fun.
And the other part of it that I love so much is we have to go into space history so that we don't repeat the mistakes that happened, you know, in the past. We also have to really know that side of it too. So it's the future, it's the past, it's the present, it's everything.
Yeah. That's something that scientists and engineers do all the time, I think, is they look at what's been done. And whether it worked or not, it doesn't matter. It's all pertinent information, right? And then you use that kind of as stepping stones to figure out, you know, like, oh, well, last time we used this material and it didn't work great. Ooh, maybe we should try this material or something like that. So is this something what goes on in your meetings? You just discuss all these things? Someone's got the history part? And
yeah, basically. And that's the really important part is having a lot of different people in these meetings, you know, even if they've never been in the aerospace industry, in their own industry, they've had something happen that none of us have even thought of. And so this one person could save a mission because they had this experience, you know, in a different industry.
Wow. This it sounds like your brainstorming sessions are like a replay of Apollo 13 and how NASA had to, you know, lots of space fans have seen that movie. So we know the story of how as soon as the explosion happened and things went wrong, basically everything at that point was problem solving with what resources do we have? What do the astronauts have up there? What can we do about it? And how do we keep them alive? And it sounds like you guys like are doing that over and over.
It's like that, but luckily we don't have it happening. We can just think about it in the future.
Right,
we don't
have
the stress of it happening right now. We're trying to prevent that.
Sure. So with your job currently and with your cool company, is there something that is particularly exciting for you that you guys are working on right now?
That you can tell us about. We understand if you can't tell us about stuff.
We have bumped up against that whole, yes, there is, but can't tell you.
There is some stuff that I would love to tell you guys that I cannot for about another year. So give me a year. I'm going to talk about it. Cool. But like one of the things we do is we were working on the human landing system back to land back on the moon. And then we are working on the Lunar Gateway project, which will be like the ISS for the moon. So like we are very focused on the moon right now, of like keeping humans alive around the moon, near the moon, on the moon for a longer period of time than we've ever had to before. So that's been really cool. I've gotten to work a little bit with spacesuits, which has been like a dream come true for me. Like that's been so cool to do just because spacesuits are cool looking and everything.
They are.
But they're tiny. They're basically tiny little habitats, right? So you just
They are. I mean, when you think about it, inside that you have the pressure control, the temperature control, you have oxygen, you have everything that you need to exist like on your own, you know, but you are still tethered to the ISS.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's part of the issue is we can't do that if you're going to go walk around on the moon. So we got to figure out how to bring all that stuff with us in like a little backpack or something. But then, yeah, like I said, there's just problems. You've got mobility issues. It's heavy. You don't want to carry that around. It's a whole wormhole we can jump into.
I want to go back just to explain to our listeners, what is the Lunar Gateway project? Because I know what it is, but can you tell them just a little bit of what it is?
Yeah, basically, so the Lunar Gateway is going to be when we go back to the moon in 2024, we have to have something orbiting so that the astronauts can go up and down and have some place to kind of come back to. Okay. And it's basically going to be like the International Space Station, but for the moon. So instead of orbiting Earth and having astronauts live around low Earth orbit, it's going to be for the moon where the astronauts can go live in that habitat. There should be more food, more resources. Hopefully there'll be like a greenhouse so they can grow plants and stuff. So it'll be really cool when that's up and running.
I'd never thought about that. So this is kind of like, so before we went to the moon, it was like, hey, we get there, we plant the flag. Oh, cool. And then we come all the way back, right? So now we're going to be able to go potentially up and down to the moon to visit and still stay in orbit around the moon. That's
exactly
cool.
It's kind of like the difference between, you know, you went hiking with your parents versus you went backpacking across the mountains and the, like, you got to carry everything with you.
Okay. That's a good analogy. That works really well. I like that. Very cool. Working on Lunar Gateway sounds a lot of fun too, man, because as a space geek, I've heard of Lunar Gateway before. One of the things I'm excited about is because it's at the moon and we have more powerful telescopes than we've ever had before, we are going to be able to see that through telescopes from here on Earth. So even though I don't get
to... Are you going to wave at him, Jeff? Are you going to wave at him?
How did you know? That sounds very cool. So I have to ask, I think I know the answer to this. You've been thinking a lot like an astronaut to do all this stuff, and you are working on what our astronauts over the next, I mean, at this point, we're talking 10 to 30 years right. are going to be systems that they're going to be using and we're going to be launching up there. Are you one of those astronaut hopefuls?
Oh, yes. Of course I am. I would love to go to space. I'd love to go to the moon. And I'd love to go and be able to say, I trust this air. This air is going to be good air because I know who built it.
I feel like you would be a good one to have along. If I was going to be an astronaut, I would want some of the engineers that built the stuff that we're using with us on the trip with whatever little toolkit you're going to need to fix it.
I can do that. I can be the little fixer to make sure everything runs well. But yeah, that's definitely part of the reason I took this job is because I would love to go to space one day. And I want to make sure that while I'm up there, you know, I am the person that they can count on for everything, whether that's, you know, life support, whether that's one of the things I focus on is just being kind of like a good team player and everything like that. And having that like really good, it's called emotional intelligence. So not at my job, but that's what I focus on in my other time. And so I'm really figuring out how to bring all this together to make sure that we have the best possible chance we have of the team we bring up to space.
I mean, that's really very important. Cool. Being an astronaut would be really fun. And so good luck with that. I think it's not easy to be chosen, right? That's it's a difficult thing. It is a difficult training process, but I think that's so cool. And I could talk about this forever, but we are going to have to end, unfortunately. We're wondering if you have a really super cool challenge for our listeners, Bailey, something about space or something.
Yes, I do. I have a really fun challenge that I think you guys will get a lot of really good information out of. My challenge is for you to sit down with your parents or whoever else you want to in your house who you live with. These are your crewmates, okay? This is your astronaut crew. So these are the people. You guys are your team that you have to figure out how to do this together. So you sit down with them, and I want you guys to make a list of all the ways that you can make your house, your spaceship, more sustainable. And by that, I mean, water. We just talked about how expensive water is in space. And even though it's easier to get here on Earth, we still need to think about that. So come up with a list of ways that you can cut down on how much water you use. I don't recommend drinking your own pee, but I think there's a lot of other ways.
Please don't do that.
Cut down on your water. You can turn off the faucets while you're brushing your teeth. Come up with those examples. You can come up with ways to cut down on food waste, or cut down on your electricity and power that you use. Another good one is making sure that you, if you can walk somewhere, maybe do that so you don't use gas from your car and everything like that. So just think about it. You have to get creative. You have to sit in that room with everyone and brainstorm all the ways that you can make your spaceship more sustainable.
Very cool. I love it. I think that's awesome.
That is a very cool challenge. And as you were going through it, I can't wait for our listeners to interact with us because there sounds like a lot of ways this could be a fun project.
Yeah, it's time to get creative, right?
Very good. And we could start problem solving at home.
There you go.
So now, before we close out and before I let you go, I almost did forget. I do know that you are a science communicator and you are very popular out there in the world. You are very active out there in the broad space community, not just doing your own job. But can you tell me what is a space cuber?
I love talking about this. I have coined the term space cuber. When I was younger, one of the first things I learned how to solve for Solve It was a Rubik's Cube. Oh, and yes. I loved being able to solve a Rubik's Cube. Oh, okay. And as it's gone further, I've gotten faster and faster. And wow. Last year, I actually have become an official Rubik's Cube ambassador with the goals of hopefully solving a Rubik's Cube in a parabolic flight in zero gravity, and then eventually on into space. That would be my goal. So that's what a space cuber is, someone that can solve a Rubik's Cube.
Wow. That's wow.
That's super cool.
That's very, very cool.
Before we say our goodbyes, where can people follow you?
Yeah, of course. I'm on most social media as at Ninjaneer Girl. Sounds a little weird, but Ninja Engineer Girl. Ninjaneer Girl. You can Google my name, Bailey Burns, and I'm sure I'll pop up. I really, really love talking to people like you guys. So please email me or message me and tell me about your goals in space or STEM or whatever, because I really want to hear all these amazing stories.
Oh,
wow. That is very cool.
You're probably going to get inundated with people asking you questions, which you probably won't care about, but
it's going to be fun. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show, Solve It for Kids. It has been a delightful chat about space, as always, right, Jeff?
As always. And Bailey, do good work. We got to keep these astronauts alive.
Yes. That's the goal. Yes. Thank you guys so much for having me on. This was a blast.
Thanks, Bailey.
Wow, wasn't that a show packed full of space awesomeness? Aside from the fact that we just ended with that super cool talk about her being a space cuber, and she's going to be the first person to solve a Rubik's Cube, both in zero gravity and then in space, she is working on all of the key systems to keep astronauts and eventually humans like space tourists alive in space.
That's a pretty big job Bailey has there, but you know what? It sounds like she has a pretty good handle on this, and good luck to her in trying to become an astronaut. That would be super cool.
Absolutely. So everybody go follow Bailey on her social media at Ninjaneer Girl. She has a fantastic story. And as you just heard on this podcast, she is super fun to listen to and be around with all of her space knowledge.
Right. And of course, listeners, be sure, as always, to check out our website, solveitforkids.com. Every episode has their own website page, so you can learn more about Bailey. We're going to put some super cool videos on there about space. There's even a book list. So if you have kids out there that want to learn more about how to be a systems engineer or mechanical engineer in space, you can find it there. But also check us out on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and they are, our handles are what?
At Kids Solve at all three of them. We look forward to seeing you there, and then we look forward to seeing you on our next episode of
Solve It for Kids.